Hello there, everyone, and welcome to episode 9 of season 3 for Psych to be with you with me, your host, Christopher Leach, aka Chimp195. My guest this episode is none other than Matt Storm, aka Stormageddon. Matt is an amazing podcaster, hosting and producing, an occasional DJ, and let's be honest, a whole lot more. Matt currently works on a number of podcasts, and I couldn't wait to talk to a true professional about the craft. This was a fantastic chat, and it includes podcast pro tips, gaming for work and for fun, being a celebrity, parasocial relationships, and so much more. It was a pleasure to speak with Matt. They are fantastic, insightful, hilarious, and for me, truly a kindred spirit. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. I would also like to advise that there is some strong language throughout the episode that some viewers may not enjoy. Check out Matt and all of their podcasts with links attached to wherever you find this episode. Enjoy. Hello there, everyone, and welcome back to episode 9 of Psyched to be with you, season 3, with me, your host, Christopher Leach, aka Chimp195. How are we all doing? This episode is going to be electric. I'm super excited about it. Let's just get straight into it. My amazing guest, if you could please just introduce yourself, tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Matt, aka Stormageddon, or Matt Storm, if you know me outside of the internet space. And I am a podcast producer, host, and editor. I have also dabbled in Twitch streaming, burlesque hosting and producing, DJing. I think that's everything. Yeah, I guess that covers it.
I mean, that is a wonderful, eclectic collection of things, most of which bring in the goods, which, you know, love to see it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, I am grateful to have done a variety of different things in my life and mostly focused on podcast production, editing, and hosting these days.
So I'm aware of the great irony, but podcast and editing and hosting, can we get a bit more into that? Because we were just saying off air, if you've seen any of the show before, you'll know it's very cut and dry. The episode gets plopped on. The audio, I put an intro and an outro on it, and it's, you know. But, like, it's mostly just two people sitting having a chat because I create the type of content I would consume. And I'm the type of person that would stick just two people having a chat on YouTube while I'm doing something else.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, my earliest stuff that I started with was I actually was doing a music podcast for many years with two co-hosts where we listened to a new album every week. And every Monday, I think, is when it used to come out. Or did we record on Mondays? I don't know. It's been a long time and I'm old. But we would just pick an album apart track by track and like discuss each track and discuss the album and then rate the album because everything needs a rating and then kind of have a music chat on the back end. I did it for many years. It's now on, I like to say, indefinite hiatus, which is a nice way of saying that it doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. But that started me in the world of podcasting. And then through that show, I started interviewing musicians, which made me start an interview podcast with Rand for many years and went on hiatus earlier this year. I kind of wrapped it up with a bow, interviewing a creator and games journalist that I admired for a long time, Patrick Klepek, and then some other couple interviews after that. I decided to kind of wind that down, but I still host and produce three other podcasts, Fun and Games, which is a video game discussion podcast, Side Quest, which you've done an episode for, which is within the feed of Fun and Games, which is every Monday and every other Friday. It's a different host talking about a game they love and why they love it. Super simple concept. It's just a monologue talking about a game that you're really passionate about. And then Reignite is a BioWare podcast, started as a Mass Effect podcast. And then when we finished all four Mass Effect games, we're like, well, we have to do something else. So we transitioned to Dragon Age, which we're doing now. We're in Origins. And then Screen Snark, which is a TV and movie podcast that I host with the incredible Rachel Quirky Shank. And we bring a guest on to talk about Round Robin style, the most recent thing we've watched, and then interview whoever the guest is. Though for the coming weeks, as of when we're recording this, maybe it's over by now by the time you're hearing it, but there is a SAG and a WGA strike. So during that period, we're going to be discussing YouTube series and, you know, plays and books and pretty much none of the Struck material to support the WGA and SAG-AFTRA, which was a decision we didn't come to lightly, but was important. And so the show, by the time you check it out now, may be back to normal, or we may still be striking through the end of the year. Who the hell knows? But yeah, that's kind of the broad strokes. And I've been doing it for about 11 years now, podcast hosting, producing, and editing.
So I almost hope you haven't listened to any of my podcasts, because I feel like with that level of expertise, it's not going to be good.
Oh, stop. That's definitely not true.
In truth, like, you know, podcasts can be many things, right? I'd like to think I'm a decent talk show person. It's this bit that I excel at. Whether people enjoy listening to that is a them problem. I just enjoy having chats with brilliant people.
Yeah, I mean, my original interview show was mostly that, and I've built a lot of my shows on that concept. I wouldn't call any of my podcasts editorial. I mean, I guess Fun and Games sometimes when we cover like PAX and stuff like that, they're sort of being editorial, but for the most part, it's just folks having a chat, whether it's me and my co-hosts or us and a guest. Like, it is meant to, all of my shows are meant to be very conversational, because like you say, I make the stuff that I'd want to hear, and I like more I like analytical stuff, I like journalism and great journalistic shows, but that's not what I want to make. And that's not what I primarily listen to. So I tend to stick to the more conversational, casual stuff.
Mm-hmm. So one of the sort of big emphases that I have with this show is about, you know, not just what we do, but why we do it. So, and I think like this is maybe a question people don't think about, because podcasts are kind of consumed more than they're thought about. But like, what got you into podcasting? What made me think, yeah, podcast, that's it?
So the person who got me into podcasting, I no longer follow, because he turned out to be, can I swear on this show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, great. He turned out to be a horrible piece of shit. But in the early days of podcasting, if you listen to podcasts, you knew Chris Hardwick, who turned out to be an abusive shit. But he ran a podcast called The Nerdist, and I really liked it. And I listened to it for many years. And it was mostly him just chatting with other folks. And I was like, well, I mean, I can do that. And I have connections to cool folks that I could chat with. And so, like, that's kind of where my inspiration for a lot of stuff came from. The music show came from just me and my two closest friends being really big music nerds and figuring, well, if anyone asshole with a microphone can make a podcast, we can do it. And we tried it. And like, the early episodes are awful. Crash Chords is still available on all podcast platforms, as far as I know. And, you know, after the first like 10 or 15 episodes, we got our like shit together and we really understood. We stopped recording into an iPad microphone and bought like actual microphones. And but yeah, my early inspirations for podcasting was mostly my love of music and then my love of comedy, because a lot of the podcasts in the early days that I listened to, and a lot of the more famous ones that have been around a while, were done by comedians. I mean, Mark Maron's been doing this longer than any of us, and started, he was a stand-up and then was struggling as a stand-up, made a podcast, made connections, and then came back around as a stand-up. And so like, that's where my earliest inspirations to do this came from, is from those places. And then it just kind of naturally grew from there, leaning into my interests. I'm a big TV and movie nerd, and obviously a big video game nerd, as you know. And so like, Fun and Games just came from me and Jeff like sitting on my couch talking about games for hours, and both of our spouses being like, this is ridiculous. Stop. Like, go make a podcast or something. Like, we're here too. And so we did, despite them. And then they were our guests on our 100th episode to talk about games with us, which was kind of fun. But
nice.
Yeah, it came from like, I just liked talk shows. I liked chatting with people and meeting people. I've always been an extrovert until the minute I'm not. I'm mostly an introvert, but like, in comfortable social settings, I can be extroverted. And I really like just learning about people and learning about what they do, which is a lot of where the origins and inspirations for wanting to engage in this stuff came from.
So I was saying this to a previous guest recently, actually, like, I would file myself as an introvert that wears a very extrovert coat.
Yeah.
I would charge totally when I'm alone. Like, I need that time to just sit and bury my head in a game or a book or something. But like, I mean, you know, we met at PAX. Get me in front of an audience. Love it. Living my best life. Loving
it. Yeah, same. You know? Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm nervous to the minute I get on the panel stage, and then once I'm sitting at the panel, I'm fine. Like, I'm having a blast. I'm loving it. But yeah, I'm the same way.
So I mean, I get, I'm realizing that this is very almost tawdry when on a podcast. But like, if, because, you know, you said yourself, any asshole can grab a microphone and do a podcast, right? But what advice would you give to someone who wanted to start a podcast? And I will preface that with, I legitimately started this when I was chatting to some PhD friends, and we were like, we should time capsule our journeys. We should like chat where we are now, like year one, and you'll meet up semi-regularly to follow that. And I kind of put this idea out into the Twitter universe, RIP, gone but not forgotten. and like people are like, yeah, sounds like a really cool idea. I'd like to chat to you about what you do and why. And then I just did episodes and didn't stop.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, it's funny. I think the best advice I can give is just to do it, like to just record stuff. Maybe don't release everything right away, but record a bunch of stuff, really get a sense of it. But I think the best advice I can give is find a niche. You know, one of the things about Fun and Games and why I think we found some success, especially through side quests, is like, I could have made another News of the Week show that talks about what's going on in games and talks about what we're playing. And I would have been just another one of those shows. But instead, we decided to stick to specific topics per episode, have incredible guests. You know, a colleague of yours, the one and only Rachel Cowart, came on to talk about anxiety in games. And like, it was a great conversation about how Starfield terrifies me because I don't have that kind of time anymore. And I'm anxious to play it because it's just such a big game that I know I'll like, you know, things like that. And like, then now the funny part is we have a Patreon now, which has been really great. And we have some incredible folks contributing. We do a monthly Patreon episode where we do exactly the thing that we weren't going to do for free, because now we have people who are paying in to listen. So we know we'll want to hear this. And so now we're doing monthly chats where we talk about what we're playing, what's in the news, what we're excited about. I think when you're making a podcast, you really want to lean into A, your best personality traits and your strengths, but also find something that makes it unique, because just doing another topic podcast or another chat show, especially if you happen to be a straight white male, there are quite a few of you out there. Maybe we need less of you, but like, I think that if you want to stick out in any way, have diverse guests and absolutely find a niche. The reason Reignite, I think, found such a passionate audience is A, Mass Effect fans are nuts. And I say this as a Mass Effect fan, like we are so hungry for Mass Effect content. And so that really, I think, brought people in, but also because we played those games as if we were Shepard and made decisions as if we were those characters and discussed it, which I found out later on, I've always done that in games that I can role play in. Like I play as a version of myself, but apparently most people don't do that. And so that was really fascinating to discover. But yeah, finding those like specific things you can hold on to and then building off of that.
It's at this point show that I'd like to remind people that while I am a straight cisgendered male, I am albino and disabled.
Yes. You hit those diversity check marks.
I, you know, I'm not just another straight white able guy. I try. Got to be. The what you were touching on there with the avatar is really interesting, because I found that come out a little bit in some of my own sort of research, and there's a whole school of research that looks on avatar relationship, but it's like, your avatar is me, avatar is other, avatar, you know, and those relationships are so dynamic. And I think it sort of, there is that element of, you know, if I play Final Fantasy VII, I want to feel like I'm all the party members, you know, even though they have their own sort of personalities and they interact differently. Whereas when I play as like, you know, Geralt, it's like, okay, well, I've read a lot of The Witcher, I'm a nerd. So it's like, okay, well, I have an idea of what like he would do. But if that's different to what I might do in any situation, which choice do I pick? And that, I think, is fascinating as like an area of discussion.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think, and I don't know that I prefer one over the other. I mean, like, I just finished Final Fantasy 16 not that long ago, and I loved it. And I loved Clive, a character who I can relate to on some levels, but is definitely very much a character that's not me. And I still really enjoyed it. But on the other hand, like, I'm excited for Baldur's Gate 3, which is coming up. By the time this is out, it'll be out. And like that, I'm going to make a custom character with the hottest, sexiest demon boy that I can conjure up as my other. Because, you know, why wouldn't you? But in those kinds of games, I really want to kind of do an extension of myself and see how much I can make a character look like me, play like me, make decisions like me. It's really fascinating that gaming, especially now in the modern landscape, gives us kind of a swath of different choices or no choices, depending on the kinds of games you want to play.
I think, you know, it's I have no research to back this up, but in my experience, unless you are doing a Final Fantasy-esque experience where the story is about this cast of characters, you really should just lean into having character customization. Because being able to have any, and my favorite line, and it's still a problem, is I'm an albino, I have white hair, white beard. I still can't have white hair on Animal Crossing's New Horizon.
Yeah.
So there is just a part of that. My hair is not grey. So there's a part of me that always just feels plucked out of that a little bit. It always frustrates me. And obviously it's linked to like ableism and things like that. But like, I have had it in previous versions. So it's my happy little island, my perfect little place. There's not quite me on it. And just little things like that, I think, really add to the, you know, even if it's like the best, most heroic, badass version of yourself, you still want it to feel like you. I know from speaking to, I've spoken to some professional TTRPG players, Jen Kretschmer, who has been on the show, and they sort of, you know, sort of said that you tend to start as characters that are quite like the opposite to you in every way, then closer to you, and then you begin to move away into like roles, and they become these people that you inhabit, as opposed to you just you with a, you know, some face paint on.
Yeah, totally. I just started a new Pathfinder 2 game in this like kind of steampunk world, and so for my character, I decided to create a automaton preacher. And I'm giving him a southern drawl and kind of making him a little greedy and like mischievous and like just kind of completely nothing like me. And it's been really fun. Also an opportunity to express they, them pronouns in a fantasy setting that feels easier for folks who may not be used to using those for me to use them because, you know, I'm a robot. I'm not a person. I don't have gender, you know, kind of a thing. And yeah, I agree. I think when I first started playing D&D in high school, I was like, yeah, this is me with a sword. Because, you know, it's safe. It's easy. You can play that role a lot easier. And then as you get more comfortable with yourself, know who you are, you can kind of lean into jumping into a role that's vastly different from your own.
Mm-hmm. Have you sort of like, you know, because I feel like TTRPG is slightly removed from games, but I think, can you sort of maybe talk about using they them pronouns in this? Can you talk about maybe like that, exploring that within the game space at all? I don't really have a question for this is off kilter.
No, I so actually going back to my podcasts, I don't know, I said it like that, but here we are.
Reignite, it was sultry. I like one,
yeah, oh good, thanks. Reignite, the thing I really loved about it is, so I host that show with the incredible Frankie Bradley Lestrange, and they came out as non-binary and pansexual before I did. But when we were playing those games, so I played the original Mass Effect trilogy when I was in college. I wasn't really experimenting with my queerness or my gender, and I mostly, but I did pick a femship because I preferred Jennifer Hale. I was already a geek at that point. And I ended up romancing Liara. So it was queer, but not quite, because I was, even though I was playing a female character, it was with a female presenting character. So when we went back to it for the podcast playthrough, I was like, all right, I'm really going to go into this. Like, let's let these characters win me over. Let me fall for these characters. And very quickly and easily, I fell for Kaden Alenko, a character who I'd ignored in previous playthroughs, because If You Don't Dig is very kind of cookie cutter until you actually get to know him. And by the third game, I, of course, ended up romancing him as like my final romance for the game, for the trilogy. And that was me expressing my queerness in a way that I never felt comfortable doing when I was younger. And the gender stuff came up after that. But I've now since gone back and like when trying to create a character in Andromeda, which I played for the first time for the podcast, I tried to make them look as genderqueer as possible, even though you can't choose them pronouns or non-gender. It has to still fit that archetype. Mm-hmm. And like, as I play games now, I do explore that. Do I tend to pick male presentation more because I do present as masculine more often? Yes. But like, one thing that was really cool in an indie title called Romancevania that came out this year, which was a Castlevania-like game where you could, it was also a visual novel where you could romance characters in the game. It was like a dating game kind of thing. It was really neat, is they make you pick a, for you playing as Dracula, they make you pick a body type, and then they make you pick a voice. It's very, like, it's kind of still binary, but you could have a male presenting Drac with a femme presenting voice. It was a little goofy because they were like, they were hyper masculine and hyper feminine, but still the fact that you could choose and like mix it up, and it wasn't specifically male or female. It was just you picked a presentation and you picked a voice, was really cool. And a lot of other games have done that. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands also had you just pick body types and a voice. It didn't make you pick a gender, which was really cool. So I like those kinds of things. I like how games have gotten better with it. They're still not great, but they are like starting to explore it more. And now that I'm in that place and understand that about myself, it's fun to explore those things and try and figure out how they fit me. And there are some games where, like, if I play Mass Effect, I still prefer Femme Shep, not because I feel feminine per se, but because I like Jennifer Hale and I like her voice. Mark Meer is great, but I like Jennifer Hale's performance better. It's not always about the gender, but me playing, often playing as women in games when I could, did tell, like, rings differently now. I look at that and go, okay. I think I understand why I made that choice in a way that at the time I probably wasn't thinking about my own gender in that way, mostly because I didn't know either.
You see, you know, this is, again, it's ironic to be having a conversation with someone who makes podcasts professionally and me be like, this is why I love the show, because that, you know, I send out a list of questions. I try and be quite prudent. And then I just like, so look, can we talk about this? I'm interested to know. I feel so much more informed now, and I love that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the reason you're a great interviewer is because not only do you come prepared, but then you also like can follow the conversation. I've listened to previous episodes and you're not afraid to like clearly go off book and just be like, well, hey, you said this, so what about this thing? Because I think the best conversational and interview podcasts do that, right? They follow the thread, not necessarily what they had planned.
So Len, let's keep pulling on this thread then. pardon me. You play a lot of games, and I believe you have a thread of every game you've beaten this year. Yes.
But see, I don't anymore.
You see, I opened up a second conversation track. I'm a pro.
You did. So those who don't follow me on Twitter, I used to be DJ_StoreStormageddon. Wow, that was great. I can't even say my own username. I used to be DJ_Stormageddon on Twitter. But unfortunately, because I decided to clap back at TERFs with a threatening cartoon kitten holding a knife, I got permanently banned from Twitter on that profile. I, during Pride Month, shared a photo of a cute cat saying, if you don't get my pronouns right, I'll identify as a problem. It was meant to be funny, but also absolutely true because I hate TERFs. And somebody reported it who is following me. I have no idea who, but apparently someone. And Twitter just banned me and suspended my account. So I can still access it, but I can't tweet. I can't see my followers. I can't do anything. And so I've shifted over to the Fun and Games Pod Twitter just to for my shit posting. But yes, I did, until that went under because Elon Musk sucks. I did have a Twitter thread of every game I've beaten, thankfully, because I also have, so my podcast network that I'm a part of has a Discord server, and during, in our gaming space, we have a gaming log channel where you post the games you've beaten and when you beat them, like how many hours it took if you want. And because I had been doing that for the last few years, I was able to scroll back and grab all of that info and create a Word doc. So now that lives on my Patreon for Fun and Games. It's patreon.com/funandgamespod. It's free content. It's not behind a paywall. I post every time I beat a game on the Patreon, and then I also link to a Word doc that you can go look at that has every game I've beaten this year.
Respectfully, Matt, the fact that that's in a Word doc has hurt my soul. That should be in an Excel. That needs to be a spreadsheet.
I know.
With columns, we can color code it. Like,
I know, but the thing is that it's so freeform, and it's usually a paragraph about how I feel about the game. It's like, to squeeze a paragraph in a tiny little cell, it doesn't work as well. This is a nice list. You can scroll through, like reading an article.
Okay. Just saying. I respect. I said respectfully, but like, just, oh, that sounds like data. That should be in a table.
You're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong. But yeah, I was keeping track of that for a while, and now I'm using howlongtobeat.com has like a system where you can track what you're playing, what your backlog is, what you've beaten. I mostly modern consoles. I haven't put every game I've ever beaten in my entire life in there because I'd be here for weeks. But it's been a fun way to track that. And I'm DJ underscore Stormageddon over on How Long to Beat if you want to follow that. But
links
maybe
you found this episode.
Yeah. One thing I'll say though, because you brought it up, like I want to do another Twitter thread, but I wasn't going to start a new Twitter thread for this year on Fun and Games after working so hard to do it on my actual Twitter profile. So I'll probably start another one next year. And Jeff and I do tweet from the Fun and Games account our top 10 games of the year as a list at the end of every year. Mm-hmm. And so doing that won't be a problem. It's frustrating. I'm over on Blue Sky now also, and maybe I'll do it there. The threads work a little differently over there. We'll see. Like, it was a fun idea. I'll probably still keep a doc of it. But like, I'm trying to point people towards like we're trying to use the Fun and Games Patreon as like a blog as well. We post exclusive stuff there too, but it's mostly all of our episodes, it's articles, it's whatever else. Cause I think with the death throes of Twitter, I'm never going to find another social media that I fit really well to my work. And so I think having this Patreon is going to be the safest place to find all that stuff until inevitably something else.
On like a number of levels. Cause like I always use Patreon like for that, like it has posts from an old blog and, you know, I don't have time to write as much as I'd like, but it like that is the place where all the content is kind of categorized. That is like the podcast episodes or a review or something. Like that's where it's organized very neatly. And you can access it early if you want to throw some dollars my way. You know what I mean? That type of thing. And I do think it's very good for that. It's almost like, you know, it organizes that type of content very well. But I think I struggle to manage when it's like, right, I've now got to post this in 20 different places. And because, you know, trying to find the new social media, I have not got the spoons. Like, listen, that's a whole nother thing. We're talking about games. What are you playing? What have you enjoyed?
So I'm playing too many things, as usual. A friend of mine from Prima Games, Jesse Vitelli, who I talk to all the time, every time I say I want to try a new franchise or like all the Pikmin games are on Nintendo Switch, he goes, Matt, stop. You've played too many games. Can't play another game. I'm currently actively playing, actually, as of right before we started recording, I'm playing through the original Portal. I'm going to be guesting on another podcast sometime soon to talk about the Portal franchise. So more on that. I just, as I said, just beat Final Fantasy 16 last week. I started Final Fantasy 4 for the first time. I'd never played it. Nice. Put out a Twitter poll of 4, 5, and 6, which I should start with. And the consensus was... You may have voted 4-1, but a lot of folks kept saying you should do 4, 5, 6 because you can see the progression of the improvements and they're all pretty solid games. So you won't go wrong going in that order. And so that's probably what I'm going to do. So I've been enjoying that. I played a little Exoprimal. I was streaming a little bit of it. I was lucky enough to get a review code from Capcom. Thank you, Capcom. I'll thank you everywhere. What else have I been playing? I think that's really it right now. I'm excited for Sea of Stars comes out. It will be out by the time you hear this. I'm a big Chrono Trigger nerd, one of my favorite games of all time. And so when the folks who made The Messenger, which I love, said that they were making an RPG in The Messenger's world inspired by Chrono Trigger, then yes, absolutely. I was going to play that game. So that's one I'm really excited for. I'm trying to think if there was anything else I've been messing around with. I think that's really it for right now. Oh, and I'm inevitably and forever playing Persona 5 Royal until I can finish it. I'm like 60 hours in. I know I'm more than halfway through, but I think I'm just going to slowly pick at that forever until I finally get to the end.
So that's a whole grab bag of games, and we love that.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm kind of interested in is how you decide what to play. Because obviously that's deeply psychological, but also I'm a nerd. And the games I pick to play, I do in a very specific way.
Yeah. A lot lately, because Fun and Games has been lucky enough to get a ton of review codes, especially indie games, that drives a lot of my decision making. I base a lot of my decision making around the release calendar. I was lucky enough this year to get a code for Jedi Survivor, one of my most anticipated games of the year. And so I was able to do side quests about it. I was able to play it at my own pace, but still then do something content wise about it to promote it, which was really awesome because I ended up really absolutely loving it more than the first game. But I think also my tastes drive a lot of it. But because I've been kind of active in the conversation, whatever that means, I tend to want to play the new stuff as it's coming out, so I can talk about it with my friends. I'm not on Twitter as much, obviously, but I'm active in a lot of Discords, and there are a lot of great conversations happening around current games. When Tears of the Kingdom came out, I played it as soon as it came out, ended up really loving it a lot, enjoying it more than even Breath of the Wild, which I liked but didn't love. I think it's like its first release calendar, second taste, third what have I always wanted to play. Like, I wasn't planning on replaying Portal, and then when I got asked to do this podcast to talk about the franchise, I was like, well, it's been a while since I've played them. I should at least replay the first one because it's like 4 hours long, and then like play a chunk of the second one if I don't finish it. But like, so when I guessed on stuff, I ended up playing last month, not all three, but I ended up being on a podcast that has yet to air, though will have aired by the time this airs. Love content creation.
I know.
Jeremy Bearme. I guessed it on a show called Tales from the Backlog, where me and two other guests, along with Dave, the host, talked about all three versions of Metroid 2, the original, the Nintendo remake, and then AM2R. I'd played the Samus Returns remake right before Dread came out a few years ago, but I'd never played 2 or AM2R, and so I played those both for that show. Like, I find myself inserting stuff if it's for a podcast, and then, like, if I just hear something that's supposed to be really great, sometimes I'll drop everything. I played Dredge also this month, and Dredge is a indie game about fishing and Cthulhu and horrors, and it's like a horror game as well. It was great. I loved it. And like, that was just because I heard it on a podcast, folks talking about it. I was like, oh, I want to play this. This sounds great. And then went to check it. So I guess podcasts are also a big influence of that. Like, as things start to stack at the tail end of the year, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm excited for Alan Wake and Spider-Man 2, and they come out like 2 weeks apart or a week apart. And then we're getting Super Mario RPG like a week later, or Mario Wonder a week later, and then I think Mario RPG is in November. So like, my fall is completely fucked as far as figuring out what the hell to play, because there's so many games coming out.
It's a both wonderful yet dangerous time to be alive if you like playing games.
Correct. Yeah, and I try not to abandon stuff. I am better as an adult of like, if I'm not having a good time, saying, okay, I don't have to play this game anymore. I don't have to finish it. But I like to finish things, so I hate to jump to new games. I can only juggle one or two games at once. Like, I'll play a Switch game, I'll play a game on my PlayStation 5, and maybe a PC game. Like, if I can have one game per platform, usually I can keep them straight. But like, if you play too many action-adventure games at the same time as an RPG, your controls are going to get all... I tried playing The Witcher 3 the first time, like, while playing three other games. Couldn't keep it straight. Mm-hmm. Witcher's controls were too complicated. When I went back and just focused on it many years later, I was like, oh, this is great. This is awesome. So I try not to overburden my brain with, like, trying to remember the control schemes of too many games at once.
I promise I'm not just attempting to play it with you. Truly, but like, not
I don't mind it though. I'm
here
for it.
With that on multiple levels, because obviously everyone's got a backlog, right? And I have like, I try and alternate between a game that I'm midway through and something that I haven't started, and then I alternate between those. So like, I was admittedly only 3 hours into Fire Emblem Three Heroes, but I went back and just finished that, just like, right, we're gonna sit down, we're gonna do the thing. And then like, you know, I just this week finished Bravely Second and Leia. And I was like, right, we're going to do the business with this.
That was me with Disco Elysium in January. Dave, who I mentioned before, had done a side quest episode, and I listened to it. And I was like, oh, I really need to play this game. I got like halfway through it and then just dropped it because of other things. So I sat down and just focused, and I was like, all right, and I loved it, of course. It was a great game. But like, I do that all the time where like, I'll abandon something for half a year, and then I'll come back and go, all right, that's it. This week, we're plowing through it. We're getting through it. We're finishing the game.
And the reverse of that is... And as I think I noted on the side quest episode for yourself, was I love Deep Rock Galactic. And there are a few endless games that I could just play forever. But I have to, like, no, I have this 100 hours, we're putting it down. I have a PhD to do and other games to play, because the games just never stop coming. Like,
yeah, that used to be me with MMOs, which I don't play as much anymore. I dabble in and out of Final Fantasy 14 because you could do it by yourself and get through the main quest on your own. But like, I used to play like World of Warcraft and City of Heroes and like all these great MMOs. And now as an adult, it's like I look at an MMO and go, nope, can't do it. Don't have that kind of time.
And that is what keeps me from starting Final Fantasy 14, because I know that will cause a multitude of things to happen that I don't want to happen. I need to just, if I can keep like a slight more control over my life until the PhD is done, then I'll be fine.
I hate to do this because I know this will affect your edit, but I need to step away for a sec. Is that all right?
Don't worry, that's fine.
Yeah, all right.
No problem.
Sorry about that. I had to go grab my dog. He was bothering my spouse while they're trying to work, so I had to go retrieve him.
That's not a problem. If I was going to, you know, edit an episode for anyone, Matt, it'd be you. You know what I mean? You're
the well, thank you. I appreciate that.
If I was going to, you deserve getting re-rendered in full 1080p HD.
Yes.
So to sort of bring that around, and I want to kind of go back to, you know, I kind of always joke that I research games and I spend more time reading or writing about games than I do playing games. How do you feel like about podcasts, particularly podcasts about games, when that's what you do and you also try and enjoy games?
I mean, it's the challenge, right? Like, I find myself, even with Screen Snark, before the strike started, like, all right, well, it's Monday night, recording Tuesday morning, and I've got nothing I've watched. So I guess I'm watching a movie tonight. What am I going to watch? I'm watching something specifically to talk about. And like games, it happens the same way. I mean, thankfully with Fun and Games, because we're topic based, most of the time we're fine. I mean, now that we're doing those Patreon episodes, there's a little more pressure to play some new stuff. But also, like, Side Quests is about a game you love. And so there are new games that I do love, but rarely will a brand new game be one that I choose unless I like get a code for it and I really like it. Otherwise, mostly I'm going to dig back into stuff that like I loved from my youth that I replayed. It's a balancing act. And in a way that like I feel selfish for even complaining about, right? I get review codes for games. Like it really is like just figuring out kind of how certain things work best and how to fit them in. But I do feel like sometimes I am podcasting about games more than I'm actually sitting down and playing them, especially when I'm guesting on other shows and doing all this other stuff. But I love to do it, and like I make the time for it. But it does sometimes feel like when you're working on or talking about a certain thing for content creation or for writing or for whatever else, it feels like you're spending more time doing that work than actually doing the playing of games.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything that you've kind of gone through as almost like a labor of love, because like, well, I need to do it for this work thing and I'm maybe not really like enjoying it a lot? You don't have to name names per se, but have you kind of had that almost like that boss battle of like, right, we've got to just plow through this to get it? Because, you know, you mentioned Portal before. Portal, I would say, is quite enjoyable, you know?
Yes.
Like, any slogs?
I mean, thankfully, any slogs I encounter, I am very lucky that I don't have to sit with that because of the nature of the game stuff that I'm doing. If I don't like something, I just won't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And that'll be that, right? If I get a review code and I don't have anything nice to say, I'm not a games journalist. I don't need to write a review. I could just not talk about it. And that way that game can find its audience, because maybe I just didn't like it. Might still be a good game, you know?
So I would actually love to hear your professional opinion on this. And I had a very lengthy debate with my partner recently about this, of like, what is the purpose of a review, right? Because if you're reviewing content or media, and you know, we'd like to think that maybe that media is more art than entertainment, right? What's the purpose of a review? Because if something, like, if I think something is good, you might not find it good. So really what we should say is, does it function? Like, is the game physically playable from start to finish without it exploding or destroying your computer? And then, did I like it? And then actually, when I sort of have my brain go through this motion, I'm like, really, reviews are kind of pointless then, because it's just someone's opinion. And if they really liked it, doesn't mean I'm going to like it. If there's none of that factual, oh, by the way, there's this game-breaking moment, or I thought it was going to be this, but it was more this genre or something like that.
I mean, I would argue that if you're reading reviews for completely objective opinions, then you're in the wrong place. That's not what reviews are ever for anything. Think of Siskel and Ebert back in the day. Like, personal opinions will always influence. But mm-hmm. like, for the most part, I think that like review, if you have a writer that you really like, read their reviews, because even if you don't agree with them, you understand their language, how they communicate, how they interact. And so you can really get information that you want and get the kind of things that you want to help you decide whether to buy a game or not. I think people looking at review scores and not really reading articles are kind of missing the point. I think if a review is written well, like even if you don't agree with them, you can get the tidbits that you need to make your own educated decision on something. And that's what I try and use them for. And I try and stick with creators and writers that I trust or know. So even if I don't agree with them, I'll be like, all right, well, they didn't like this, but they said it's for this reason. And I don't mind that thing. So maybe I'll still give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. And that's it, right? Like you kind of need to look beyond big flashy numbers and be like, okay, but like, you know, why? What is it? And again, another example from my experience is, as far as I'm concerned, Tears of the Kingdom doesn't exist. It doesn't exist because I don't want to buy it, don't want to play it, because I know I'd want to do that a lot. But like open world games terrify me because they're so massive, and then I won't right. I'll forget what I'm doing, and then I'll leave it for 6 months, then I'll pick it back up and go, what the heck was I doing? And like even I've got the DLC, I've got the bike, I've got the little trail tells me where I've been. I'm still like, what the heck? And it's intimidating. It's so hard to pick back up. So even just like I see, oh, it's open world, maybe isn't for me.
Yeah, I think we all have genres that we like less than others. I try and engage with games, even if I think it's in a genre I don't like personally, just to try and expand my horizons. But for sure, if you like open world games, like I said, I don't have time. I used to love the Assassin's Creed games. Can't do them now. It's just they're too big. I don't have that kind of time. I played The Witcher in isolation between game releases. So like I was able to get through it. But like that was me mostly mainlining it and not doing any side quests. And I still haven't played the DLC. Which I know is fantastic. So like, it's why there are a lot of reasons I haven't played Cyberpunk, if I'm honest, but like, it was one of the reasons is like, I just don't have that kind of time. And it's why I'm glad Starfield's on Game Pass, because then I can dabble. And if I fall off, it doesn't matter. I'm not spending any extra money on it. Mm-hmm. Because a game that size, I just don't know that I have the time to engage with right now.
So I'd also like to then just pick up sort of, you know, obviously we're having this wonderful conversation about games and stuff. We touched on it. We met at PAX. You know, how did you sort of find yourself in the PAX space? What can people typically expect from you at PAXs and such events like?
So funnily enough, I started at PAX as a fan. I went to the first PAX East, the first two or three PAX Easts, and loved them. And then I didn't end up going back to PAX East till many years later when I got an invite from Bungie's Liana Rupert, who was doing a Mass Effect panel at the time and knew I had a Mass Effect panel and asked if I wanted to go, I'd get the speaker badge. I was like, sure. And I ended up going and it was great. I made connections. And so like now most of it is like we do my co-host and I, whether one or both of us go to a convention, we do coverage where we'll interview developers. We'll do like 10 to 12 clips of different interviews that we've done. If we do a panel, we'll record that and release that. I got very lucky to do a PAX East panel last year that was about queer representation in gaming with a really diverse panel, which was awesome. At PAX West, where I met you, I got to do a bunch of panels, both as a guest and as like just being a part of a community. It was, you know, I love those events. They're very fan focused. And so it was very exciting for me to then get to be like make enough connections to like actually be a part of stuff. Right. And it's all community driven and it's just been really great.
So and with kind of again, with Jeremy Berry in a little bit, Jeremy Berry. But one of the kind of things I'm interested in is, you know, you do podcasts and stuff and you kind of operate within that. And that is kind of like, you know, the mainstay of what you say you're doing, as I say, we try and peel that back a little bit further. But how do you kind of feel like managing that as a thing? Like, that's not really a question. It doesn't really make any sense. But like, how do you kind of manage doing all that and playing all the games and like, you know, doing that? Because it is a lot, right? There's an endless amount of content in an endless and vast internet. Like, how do you kind of not get overlooked by it?
I do. Is the answer. I do get overwhelmed and burned out. I try not to. I've just found a flow. I honestly really love doing it. I really love doing the work. And so I think that's really been helpful. But it's moderation. It's understanding and knowing your limits. And it took me many years to get there. I've been doing this, like I said, for almost 11 years. And there were many years of burnout and not knowing what I wanted to do. And I think it's just focusing in and understanding your limits, which I learn more and more each year. But I don't think there's a person on the planet who does the kind of stuff we do and says they never get burned out. I just don't think it's possible. I think we all have limits, and it's the understanding and being kind to yourself that I think is the easiest and best way to do it. Although it's not always easy in practice.
So is there anything that you have kind of like explicitly reserved as like, I won't do work on this. This is my thing for fun. This is my outside of work thing or time.
Yes and no. I mean, because social media exists and I like interacting with folks, I post when I'm playing stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, Final Fantasy 16 was just for me. I talked about it on the bonus Patreon podcast, but like, I haven't gone to talk about it anywhere else. Spider-Man 2 and Alan Wake 2 will likely just be for me mostly, because they're two of my most anticipated games of the year. It depends on the game, but like, if there's an opportunity to talk about it and I want to, I'll take it. But there are the Yakuza games are games that I've talked about on other podcasts. But like when new ones come out, I just want to play it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to play the games. I love that franchise so much. And I just kind of just sink into them. Yeah, it's case by case. But I definitely do have those games that like this is I'm just going to play it. I'm just going to hang out. Tears of the Kingdom was mostly that. I tweeted about it in the beginning and then I got so into it, I just played it. I didn't really worry about sharing screenshots and talking to people about it. I just played the game and enjoyed it. I find those places within games depending on the game when it comes out.
I think, again, this is something that I'm fully aware of the irony, but like, do you find it difficult to almost like, if you're sharing so much of yourself, because if you're talking about what you're passionate about and the things that you care about, and you know, you mentioned music and games and you know, TV, film, YouTube series, etc. Do you find it almost hard to like manage that time for yourself and that like you know that this is separate and this is just for me, like actually physically managing it when you're putting so much of yourself out there?
It was harder. I'm very grateful to have a very understanding and incredible spouse who I mostly only watch TV and movies with them. I don't do a lot of TV and movie watching on my own. And so that's a shared experience that's very much, I will talk about those shows that we watch if they coincide with Screen Snark, but for the most part, that's just for me. Mm-hmm. It is sometimes hard to not think about how can I process this through the content meat grinder, right? Like we want to put everything in it. But I'm a pretty public person, but I think there are still a lot of aspects of my life that like I struggled with my gender identity for a long time before I came out publicly about it. Mm-hmm. Sexuality also, like I think we're allowed to have stuff that's just for us. I try not to complain on the internet anymore. I try to keep it a positive space. Not everybody does that. I have a Twitter alt with like 10 followers of my closest friends who I can bitch and complain to, you know, or I'll text a friend, but I try not to publicly complain. You know, if there are things worth pushing up against, you know, like, you know, police brutality, you know, discrimination, all that stuff, I'm all for that. But like mm-hmm. my personal struggles, I don't think the public really needs to know. Like if something tragic happens and I want people to know on a broader level, I'll do it. But like, for the most part, that like you're allowed to suffer with your close and personal friends and on your own, but not with not publicly in the internet space.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think, I suppose the other side of that question, I guess, is, you know, you are a public figure. I personally would say that you are very well known, at least in the space. Like I know of you, knew of you before I knew you in the capacity that I did. So how do you kind of manage that, those parasocial relationships when you are someone that people think that they know?
I mean, I'm pretty welcoming and open, so I try not to make it weird. Most folks are really nice and really kind and really sweet. A lot of the listeners to the podcast are too. So I feel like I don't really have to deal with that much. That doesn't mean I won't ever, but most of the time those engagements have been really cool and really chill. And so I haven't really, you know, and I try and remember that when I like a creator, right? Like I know what they like, but I don't really know them per se, you know, and try to remember that.
Yeah, it's different to be like, hey, I like your thing, or I've seen you on, you know, this, or I'm a big fan of your Twitch or whatever, and then be like, so I like every one of your posts on Instagram. Why haven't you ever replied to my message?
I mean, gratefully being male presenting, even if I'm not a man, helps keep that away. But I know tons, when I was in the burlesque sphere, a lot of the female or female presenting performers dealt with that all the time, right? Like they post attractive photos of themselves online because that's the whole, you know, that's the whole burlesque bit. And people take it as an open invitation to just say terrible things, you know, and do terrible things.
I'm interested just because I'm interested, but how does one find oneself in the production of the burlesque space? Legitimately, I feel like I have an idea of what I think that is, but can you clarify that for listeners? What even is the burlesque space?
Burlesque is an art of striptease, usually to music, some kind of theme, or, you know, it's meant to be, you know, seductive and intriguing. It can also be comical and silly. And I got involved just because the local bar that I used to go to had burlesque shows. I met some of the producers, became friends with them, started DJing for those shows, and kind of went from there. And it was a fun community to be a part of. But after a while, I was just like, I think I've had enough. This isn't my passion. Podcasting, which I started while I was doing that, really started to take a hold. And I was like, this is the thing I want to do. And so I let it fall to the side. I still DJ live events every so often and weddings and bar mitzvahs or whatever else. But for the most part, podcasting has taken the priority. But I just found it through nerdy spaces. I started going to nerdy burlesque shows, which there were a ton of in New York. And like, it kind of just, they were all really cool. A lot of them were really cool people, really nerdy people who just wanted to hang out and chat about these geeky things. And it was kind of a fun community to be a part of for a while.
And I promise you, I'm not asking this to be in any way confrontational. It's a question. It's a question that I have heard people ask, which is why I'm asking it to you as a professional. People say, "Why do you need a DJ? You know, like, we have Spotify now. You know, I've heard people like plan weddings and go, well, we'll just stick a playlist on. We'll do a playlist that we've curated. We don't need a DJ." So, actually, to sound confrontational, defend yourself, Matt. Why DJs? Why do we need them?
The playlist can't get a vibe for a night. You put a bunch of dance songs together, people are going to be tired, non-interactive. You want to follow a flow and an understanding. Yes, you could just use a playlist, but if you're doing a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a graduation party or like any kind of event that has a flow and, you know, a mood, you want to fit that. Also, I personalize the weddings that I do. I get to know the couple. I know their music tastes. I try and sub in stuff that they'll really enjoy, expose them to new stuff they're not familiar with. Do you need that? No. Do I think it will be a much less fun wedding? Go to a wedding that just has an iPod and go to a wedding that has an actual DJ and you tell me which one you had more fun at, because I promise you it will not be the iPod. But it's like anything else, right? Technology, for those who are very narrow-minded, technology replaces human need because it's easier and cheaper. And that's not always right, but that's sometimes how people view stuff.
How do you kind of manage that? Like, because I've always kind of played this game of, I like a real spectrum of music. I would say I generally don't necessarily resonate with the stuff that is popular, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I've, you know, maybe more in bars and nightclubs at various hours of the morning. I've gone to a deck and gone, have you got this? And they've gone, no, because obviously no one would want to play that at a nightclub. But I would enjoy it. How do you kind of manage that? Like, because obviously the reverse of this is, well, you have access to such a wide range of music. How do you kind of know what, like, is good? What is good to DJ? What do you enjoy kind of good, putting together?
Good is relative. Good is relative.
We just had this discussion with the refuse. What am I doing?
But no, for me, it's like, what can people dance to? What's easy to interact with? What's, you know, kind of... Hold on one sec. I'm so sorry. Sorry about that.
All come out in the edit, don't worry. So, you know, being a DJ and synthesizing music.
Yeah, I mean, like, so being a DJ, I think, and understanding music is something anyone can do, because you can kind of follow your heart on what you like and what you... If you can dance to it, other folks probably can. You know, I think I try for weddings to keep it, you know, kid-friendly. If it's an all-ages wedding, you know, make it approachable. It's impossible to stay on top of everything that's great in the top 40. There's so much. Mm-hmm. I just try and listen to anything. I'm also pretty open-minded when it comes to the type of music. And so, like, I try and think about how someone with a less broader taste of music might lean into certain kinds of music. You know, try not to play a lot of screamo or heavy metal at a wedding where mostly they listen to country and pop, right? Those kinds of things. But I think ultimately, a lot of pop music is pretty universal, and I think if you like it, likely other folks will like it as well. That said, it's not a perfect one-to-one. I've also, like, I don't know, I listen to music very actively. I'm not a passive music listener, and so I may hear things that other folks don't. I think that's what's made me an effective DJ, is that I really lean into what I like and what I pull from these songs. Because even if other people don't necessarily know what they're hearing, like, because I can tell what makes it catchy, that may make it catchy for other people. These are all like hippy dippy answers. There's no real science. I mean, there is, I'm sure, but like, there's no hard fact. It's more like I kind of try to follow a vibe and understand the vibe of what's required at an event or a party to match that vibe.
Have you had any like moments, and I'm saying this because I've witnessed one of these at a wedding where like a guest has been like, play this song, and you're like, ah, mate, I'm maybe not sure about that. And they're like, no, play this song, and then like there's like two people dancing to it and everyone else like goes and sits down.
I've had that happen, but mostly if someone requests something, I'll say, I'll see if I have it, and just leave it at that. And if people request stuff that I, like, is hateful or is made by people of questionable morality, or songs with questionable morality, I try and I just flat out say I won't play that. And if that upsets them, then that's on them. All unless you're the bridegroom or some combination of, then you're always right, and I'll play whatever you want, even if it's the Macarena, which I hate.
cheesy like noughties pop. You can't. No, you can dislike it. You probably should dislike it. It was not a good time.
No, definitely wasn't.
so I feel like, you know, you one of the things I've kind of heard with what you're doing is you've always kind of led by, oh, I like this thing, I like this place, and you've kind of ended up with the opportunity to pursue that more professionally. And then podcast of burning along and being awesome, you now do that, and that's awesome. But what is kind of what's next? What do you want to be next level after this?
What a great question. I mean, I would love to, contrary to popular belief, I don't podcast full time. I would like to. I do have a day job at the moment that is mostly unimportant, but I'm grateful for. I think that's the next level, is being able to be big enough or popular enough to do it professionally, or not professionally. I'm already a professional doing it full time for more money. But honestly, I don't know what the next level is. I do so much right now, and I pared back so much this year, and I'm still trying to pare back. I think what's next is getting guesting on very popular podcasts like this one to get my stuff out there. And like meeting people. I alluded to an interview I had done. I did an incredible interview with Patrick Klepek, who's been in the games journalism space forever, for my now on hiatus podcast, Crash Course Autographs, or it's CPOV Autographs now is the final form. You can still find it. It was great. And like, after talking to him, I realized I want to be able to get to a level where Patrick is, where I can just do stuff. It's unfortunate what happened to Waypoint Radio, but now Remap exists. They own that business, and he's still doing a bunch of other stuff. He's going back to conventions. He's working under his own steam. Like, I want to get to a place where I can do that. I'm well known enough. I've done enough work. I've interacted with enough people that I can do that kind of work too. I don't know how the podcasts evolve. You know, we evolved to include side quests and fun and games. We now have a Patreon that, if you like video game content and want to support people, want to support me, that's one of the best ways. But like, we launched that this past January. So that was the next big step for that. You know, Reignite has evolved into going into the Dragon Age franchise. We're going to follow that through to the end. We'll probably go back to whatever new Mass Effect or Dragon Age comes out at some point. I don't know how these shows grow beyond what they have, because honestly, they've done a lot of growing in the last year or two, and I think it's just the beginning. But I would love to get paid to host something for a network or a place. But I mean, one of the, like, when G4 got relaunched and then shut down, like, I was excited for it because I loved G4, and I wanted to work. I applied to try and become one of their new hosts, didn't get it, which is fine, but now it got shut down. If I had joined it, I would have experienced what all those folks had to go through, which was horrible. And like, then I might have lost some of my content. I know Gerard lost like some stuff that then eventually I think did come back over to The Completionist, but like, because it was tied in up and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful that when companies do things or I want to boycott something, I can just do it. There's no, like, I have a conversation with my co-host, but like, there's no corporate need or connection. Mm-hmm. It sucks because you don't have that money, but it's great because then I have the freedom to do literally whatever the hell I want. And I often do. And I think that kind of freedom, I never want to sacrifice. That said, if Phil Spencer said tomorrow, can I buy Fun and Games for $2 million and make it our podcast? I would say, yes, here, Phil Spencer, thanks for the $2 million, because there's no such thing as selling out. There's doing what's best for you to make the things that you want to make.
Ultimately, you know, content is content, business is business. You know,
yeah,
we're all buying and selling something.
Yep, simple sure is. And like, I want to make it sound like I'm a scrappy indie creator who like loves being indie, and I do. But if I got paid a lot of money to do something less indie, I would totally go for that. You know, moral ambiguity aside, and obviously if it was right and I believed in it, and like, I wouldn't go work for the Republicans or anything.
Within but limits, like, yeah, it's within limits,
right? Yeah, right? Yeah.
We're all being sensible people here, right?
You know? Yes.
Like, you know,
to the best of our ability.
Yeah, like, you know, and I think there is certainly, like, I technically, and I joke about this, I was once, my wage bill was once paid by the UK government. A government I vehemently disagree with, not support. But I like to the Robin Hood scheme. I was working in outreach. I was helping underprivileged children access higher education. And they were paying me to do that. So I was taking something back, you know?
A regular Ron Swanson you were.
You know what I mean? Oh, freaking love Ron Swanson.
Hell, how can you not?
So on the back of that question then, and you mentioned you sort of had this big interview, but is there any one person or people that you would love to have on one of your podcasts? And is there a podcast that you'd love to go on? And I'll fully preface that with, I know I'll have peaked if I end up on one of your podcasts. or, you know, something like Revisionist History, you know, like,
well, being on my podcast, that can be arranged, especially now that the strike is happening. Like, Screen Snark, we need guests who want to talk about stuff that aren't TV and movies. Thank you, that's a very sweet compliment, and I really appreciate it. That's very kind. For me, it's Remap Radio. I love the folks over at Waypoint. I've been a fan for a very long time, back when Austin Walker was over there and Danielle Riendo. And so, like, it's evolved over the years. But if someday, and like, it's possible, I'm connected with Patrick. We're connected on LinkedIn. We've chatted before. Like, it's possible. But that's like my high point, just because I love that show so much. As far as guests, yeah, it's so hard. I mean, if it was alive or dead, it'd be Freddie Mercury. If I could somehow bring him back. He's one of my favorite. He's my favorite singer of all time. Queen is the best rock band of all time. It's not up for debate. Led Zeppelin can go fuck itself. I hate Led Zeppelin. Actually, genuinely and sincerely, I don't like that band and get a lot of shit for it. But it's fine.
What are your opinion on the Beatles, lad?
I like the Beatles. Beatles are pretty great. But yeah, like Freddie Mercury, if it were alive or dead. People who are alive, I don't know. Probably the aforementioned Ron Swanson. I would love to talk to Nick Offerman. I've met him once before. He's really sweet. I would love to interview him. I just love his whole ethos at this point. I've bought all his books. Like, he's just this kind of legendary human. In the game space, Tim Schafer. I have a lot of respect for him. I watched Psych Odyssey. Like, I really still have a lot of respect and admiration for him as a creator of games. So he'd be really up there. Musician wise alive, I would say Rob Thomas from Matchbox 20 is a big one for me. K-Flay, who's a rapper and rock star who I love, would be big ones as well. Literally any of those people would make my entire existence to be able to chat with them and have them on a show.
Okay. Well, I've kind of like meandered into sort of like my last sort of proper set of formal questions. And this is, if you had unlimited access to resources, people, expertise, finances, what's like your one big blue sky idea? Like, you can't just like attach yourself to something that already exists. You have to make something new. What would that be? Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it would be born out of the stuff I'm already doing. I would find a way to create short video essays about games we love and why we love them, but like sort of like side quests, but also incorporate the developer, the creators, let them hear these stories, which some of them do. We tag them and some of them do actually listen to the episodes, which is always great. But like connect game lover with creator to really like bridge that gap of why we love games. And I would do it as like a documentary series. And I think there'd be these short little 20-minute to half-hour things where you get the story of why this person loves the game, you get the story from the creator of why they made this game, and then you like do a short little Q&A where they get to meet each other and just ask each other why, you know, why do you love this game? Why did you make this game? And like, how would that conversation go, right? Like, if I could talk to Shigeru Miyamoto about why he made Mario as a diehard Mario fan, I think great interviews with him with incredible journalists and interviewers, but like a fan who just gets to ask why, I think would be such a great series and such wholesome content, right? You think about those videos of John Cena surprising children like that love him, like it's those kinds of moments, right? Where you get to meet and be a part of the thing.
No, that sounds great. That sounds like truly wholesome and joyful. Because, like, you know, if you like, if you could ask one of your favorite, creators or people involved in one of your favorite games, like, a couple of questions, or even just, I think, I you know, I've had the joy of meeting one of my favorite bands, Fall Out Boy, at a meet and greet.
They're amazing.
And one of the things that I told myself, I was like, all right, do not brick this moment, do not waste it. If you say one thing to them before you faint, tell them that you're just grateful for their music because it inspired you to pick up a guitar, write your own crappy lyrics, and discover something about yourself that you didn't know you had or needed. And I did that. Do they still remember I exist? Probably not. But I've got a
No.
photo that proves that I met them, and I got to tell them that, like, your guys' music has, had a huge impact on my life. I think we bound life-changing around a lot as a
Yeah.
phrase, but, like, their music is a huge changing of trajectory on my life, right? And I can say I got the chance to tell them that. And I think even in that
Yeah.
space, just saying why your game has meant so much to me, I think would just be hugely, like, delightful.
I agree. I mean, I've had the pleasure of meeting many creators who I like and whose work I like. That's changed my life. I wrote an article very early on CrashCourse.com, which is my music site, about how Eve 6 saved my life. Eve 6 is one of my favorite bands of all time. Max Collins is one of my favorite creators of all time. I love that he's gotten a reputation now under the Eve 6 Twitter of just shit posting constantly. It's the best. But like, I wrote a whole article about how literally their music saved my life, changed the course of my life while I was in high school when I was in a bad place, and like why their music continued to mean so much to me. And like, I think that's like, do I think that I'll have changed their lives if I ever get to tell them that? No, but do I think they appreciate it? Unless you're a shitty person. Yeah, I think most people, very few people create without wanting acknowledgement. We all create to relate. It's so connected. And like, you make stuff to meet people where they live. And if you're not, then why are you making it? And that's not an attack. It's a genuine question, right? We all have our reasons for creating, but for me, it's like you create to bridge gaps between you and whoever's out there, because it's all part of a greater conversation.
So this is a brilliant thing, and I actually mentioned this, I think it was on the last episode, or might have been the chat around the actual episode, but I recently listened to Nick Cave and Sean O'Hagan's Hope, Faith and Carnage, a brilliant book around grief and loss and being a musician. And one of the points Nick Cave makes is, he talks about, like, is art, like, is it truly art if it remains unseen?
Right.
Like, does art not require that interpretation from the recipient, even if that is vastly different from the intention of the art? But it need like if no one receives it, if no one feels it, is it really art?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it is, but yeah, I mean, I think most things are created to be engaged with. I mean, video games are the purest example of that, right? Like music and movies, it seems obvious also, but like video games are interactive without an audience. It's just a physical or digital hunk, right? It's the interaction that drives it. But I would say the same of music, books, TV, all of that stuff, right? I think all of it, you don't have to engage with it. Plenty of people listen to music just to have it in the background. That's not what I do, right? I don't expect that everyone hangs on every word of every one of my podcasts. I know I'm background noise for people, and that's just as much an honor for me as anything else. Mm-hmm. But I think interpretation, understanding, and communication is a big part of what makes art great, at least for me personally.
No, I mean, I'm inclined to agree. Again, pardon the flirting. But like, I do think like, if someone takes even the smallest kind of nugget away from the content that I create, and a lot of it is mints, I mostly just sort of do things and hope for the best and make weird sounds. I've noticed I do that a lot. Attempt to play games. But if anyone sort of takes anything from that, then like that's good enough for me. I think one of my my currently mentor through like a scheme I'm doing with Limit Break, Bryn, they say this, they would rather have 10 people you'll come back for every tweet than one tweet that 10,000 people like.
Yeah.
Because that means that people like are actively, they care about what you're doing and what you're engaging and with and that type of thing. And that's way more meaningful. And I do truly think that like, yeah, it's great if people like listen to your crap because it's like, yeah, stick it on, right? That's great. But if someone goes, oh, yeah, no, that was a great discussion. I loved it. I followed it. I was so interested. Oof, that's just hits you in the feels.
Yeah, totally. Engagement is all part of it. I'm so grateful every time someone says, thanks, I loved this episode, or, man, I just listened to this. Even if they don't engage in conversation, they just say, hey, I checked this out. I always say thank you because I'm always grateful that someone listened to a thing I made, right? Whether I have 50 listeners or 50,000 listeners, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. What matters is that those listeners want to be a part of the conversation. We say it on Fun and Games all the time. This is a conversation. Thank you for being a part of it. And that truly is the ethos of the stuff I make, is that I'm just grateful to be a part of this greater thing that we're in together.
So last sort of formal question, and I'm aware that you connected with a whole host of people, so this might be quite hard, but is there anyone that you'd like to give like a shout out to that maybe others don't give enough credit to or aren't aware of how impactful they are, or just someone who has meant a lot to you and maybe doesn't know it?
Can I give you two answers?
I'll allow it.
Yes. All right. The first one, because I have to do this because I'm cheesy and sappy, is I have to shout out my spouse, the incredible Sarah Storm, who is not only a brilliant actor, but also an incredible producer for the podcast over at LinkedIn, Hello Monday. It's hosted by Jesse Hempel and sometimes hosted by Sarah. And it's about how the nature of work is changing. And they've had conversations with a huge variety of people, from like Matthew McConaughey to, there's a great career person who came on recently that the name is bringing, but they talked to Laura Jackman about the writer's strike before it became SAG involved. And like, they're doing this incredible thing where it's not just about, there's so many other work related things that I've listened to that is just like about the 9-to-5 business job. And this show is about that, but it's also about the arts and, you know, accessibility and, you know, equality and, you know, it is one of the most informed and brilliant podcasts I've ever listened to. So Hello Monday, it's on LinkedIn. It's on every podcast platform. I highly recommend it. So that's my cheesy, sappy answer because of
links,
course I want to shout out my
credible this episode.
Well, yeah. Links everywhere. And then another creator shout out. It's so hard because there's so many brilliant people that even you and I have worked with that we love.
Who, even just someone that really had like an impact on you, just someone you want to shine the spotlight on for, you know, the kind of minute you talk about them. I invented this question like just because I was like, who's someone that's like had an impact on you? Because like you mentioned, I've been so lucky to meet amazing people. Some through this podcast initially, who I can now call friends, and those people who maybe they don't even know it have like incredibly uplifted me and helped me through moments, right? And it's just kind of like, I just think it's nice to just be like, it's almost like that, hey mom, look, I'm on a podcast kind of like feeling, you know?
Yeah, totally. I have to shout out Kenneth Shepard. If you're not familiar with Kenneth Shepard's work, you should be. He's one of the greatest writers working today. He currently writes for Kotaku. He wrote for Fanbyte before it imploded. He's written for so many different great sites. He's done features on, I believe, IGN and maybe GameSpot. He's done a bunch of different stuff. One of the most brilliant writers working right now, who also will dive headfirst into topics that are important to him, regardless of the kind of feedback or backlash. Even like, he's a big Last of Us fan and engaged in a lot of the tough conversations around that show, around that game. And he's made space for me in the games journalism space that I don't like, that then a lot of other people who I've mentioned over the years also now consider me. Like, I edit for the Game Informer show. Alex Van Aken considers me an equal, someone I listened to for years and adored the work of before I joined anything that he's a part of. Ken Shepard is the focal point of that because we guested on a panel together. And then he introduced me to a bunch of folks who introduced me to a bunch of folks who introduced me to a bunch of folks. And so I don't even know if he'll listen to this episode, but I need him to know that he changed my life and the way I engage with being able to make the stuff I make, just because he was generous enough to be my friend and introduce me to people and bring me into spaces. So I think he deserves a shout out. And if you're not reading his, he has XP Share, which is a whole vertical on Kotaku about Pokemon. I was featured in an article about why queer people like the fairy type Pokemon and like that, like correlation and connection, and just go look that up, go read it. But yeah, that's my shout out, my great inspiration.
I know I've already said this like during the time we've recorded this, but like, oh man, I love this show. I love doing this type of conversation because of that made me feel things, Matt. That made me feel things. I'm glad that I live in a time and space where I can feel things and that be okay.
Well, thank you for giving me a platform to do that.
To have a bit of fun with you before we wrap up, though, you are going to a biodome of your choice that you can take with you. One box set, film, TV show. Other, if you'd like to, especially with the current circumstances, a book, an album, and a game. Where are you going, and what are you taking with you?
I'm gonna find some way to download the entirety of Game Theory. Yep, I'm a Matt Pat fan. I know he gets some shade online. He's considered cheesy. I've always been a fan, so I'm gonna take his entire catalog of Game Theory with me because I love those videos. I love learning wacky things about my favorite franchises. Music, I'm going to cheat. It's going to be the 3-disc platinum box set of Queen, the Platinum Hits collection, because while I love all their albums, that's like the essential.
If it comes in I was going to say physical product, but if it comes in one product, I'll allow it. Totally fine.
Great. Book is tough because I struggle to read. I'm a slow reader. I like listening to audiobooks much more because I can hear... I absorb things through hearing better than I do through reading.
You can take an audio, but that's fine. We're accessible on the show.
That's true. I don't know. It's tough between my favorite book and like a book that's really helped me. So if I'm taking something to help me in this biodome, it's going to be Paddle Your Own Canoe by Nick Offerman. Just a really great book, brilliant book about like loving the things that you do and how to do them well. And then my favorite book of all time is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Douglas Adams. That one also, if I had to, it would be one of those two. And then game, it's Chrono Trigger. Like, I don't even have to think about that. Like, if I could only play one game for the rest of my life, I've already played that game dozens and dozens of times. And I still will probably play it dozens and dozens more. It's one of the best RPGs ever made. It has one of the best video game soundtracks in the history of video game soundtracks, and some of the best storytelling in video games even to this day. So that's an easy choice for me.
And I feel like not enough people appreciate the Akira Toriyama art style.
Right? Even with the Dragon Quest stuff now, it's like people overlook that. Like, it never comes up in conversation.
People never talk about it.
It's legendary. I have an inbox version of Chrono Trigger with the instruction manual. A friend of mine gave it to me. Very grateful. That artwork is beautiful. And at a time when the games didn't look like that. Like now, Dragon Ball Z Super, I think it's called, whatever the new fighting game is, it's his animations come to life, right? Mm-hmm. But like back in the day, we didn't have that in games. And so like, yeah, I love his work in that. I geeked out about it on another podcast very recently called Nostalgia Marconum. And like, it's one of those games that every time I go back to it, I just get something else from it. And it's like my lifeblood almost.
Do you have a preferred version?
Yes, the DS version, because it took the improved PlayStation version that had shitty load times and condensed it onto a cartridge. So then the load times were great. It has additional cutscenes by Akira Toriyama. Folks are often annoyed because they didn't replace the in-game cutscenes with the animated ones. The animated cutscene happens and then the in-game one happens right after. But I like it. It's like getting two perspectives of the same scene. But the DS version is absolutely the definitive version. If you can't get that, the Steam version for access. It's much better than the crappy mobile port. They improved it alongside when they were making the Pixel remasters. They improved that version of Chrono Trigger. It's still not perfect, but it's better. And then, you know, the original Super Nintendo is fine. But, like, if I had to pick a version, it's definitely the version for the Nintendo DS.
Gonna flex and say I have the DS version. I'm inclined to agree with you. Let's go.
So do I. Yeah.
And, like, why have we not got it on Switch yet? Someone riddle me this.
First, for the same reason we didn't get Mario RPG. Maybe they're working on a remake. I don't know. Who knows?
Okay, so hear me out, right? And I don't know if I've said this before on this show, right? But hear me out. Chrono Trigger Remake with the same combat style as Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah, I play it 100%. Absolutely.
Because,
yeah.
Like, that, again, I mean, we could have a whole other conversation about Chrono Trigger, right? But, like, the fact that, like, the physical space that you're in affects the attacks and the moves, and yeah. You can hit more stuff if you wiggle about a little bit or do another move or give it 10 seconds, right? That, yeah. Kind of like each character is completely unique, have their own fight style. There's the combo moves. It would even work on this, like, build up ATB with physical attacks to then do. Like, you know, yeah. Yeah, like throw off some slash moves, switch to frog, blow some bubbles, do X slash. Sign me up. Take my money.
I'm in it. Yeah. It's I either want that or I just want the Live Alive treatment, because Live Alive was brilliant. Like, just Pixel 2D HD. I am a sucker for 2D HD. I love it. It's the most gorgeous thing. And so, like, just give me that. I'll take that. Revamped music, 2D HD graphics. I'm in. Like, that's all I need.
It's Square, either or. We not just one option, but two.
Free ideas. Come on, Square Enix. Yeah. Let's go. Get on it. What else are you doing right now? It's not like you're working on other hit games that keep coming out every 3 months.
No, God. I mean, Square have been smashing it, let's be fair. They've been...
Oh, my God. Killing it.
Doing the business.
I loved 16. I really did. Like, a lot of folks were down on it. I love character action games, though. I'm a Devil May Cry sicko. So, like, it played to me. But, like, I love that story. I love the characters. Like, it wasn't perfect. There were issues, and the issues are valid. But I really loved it. You know, and then Live Alive last year or 2 years ago, whenever that remake came out, there's so much good stuff right now. Octopath Traveler 2, it's endless.
Rebirth is going to be what makes me buy a PS5. I've got, like, Triangle Strategy and Dial Field Chronicle, which I feel like a lot of people slept on, by the way. Dial Field Chronicle is like, they went, okay, let's, like, take Fire Emblem, but, like, you actually do the fighting when they're up close.
Yeah.
And the concept works. It's really like such an intellectually generous game that you feel so smart when you do it. Anyway, we're meant to be wrapping up, man. What are we getting me talking
again? Sorry, I'm the worst.
It's my fault, don't worry. My sort of the last thing I like to do is say, is there anything you'd like to ask me? I turn the tables upon myself. I've been asked how my PhD is going. Please don't ask me that. And I've been asked the bad question, so I would recommend to avoid those.
So I, as one interviewer to another, what is the interview that filled you with the most joy? Not necessarily the best interview, not necessarily the most interesting conversation or most complex conversation, but what is the conversation that filled you with the most joy? I'll even give you one of my own so you can stall, and because I know how this works. And
desperately start looking at my own episodes.
But I got to chat. I mentioned Jesse Hempel before, the host of Hello Monday. I had her on my now on hiatus forever interview series, CPOV Autographs. And like the conversation, like I liked Jesse a lot. I like her show a lot. But there's something about the way we talked about, she had a book coming out that's now out about her family and how her whole family has come out in one way or another. Gender, sexuality. Mom had a horrible run-in with part of this, like there's just a serial killer in her town and like wrapped up in that, like all of the, like, and admitting to this, like just all like just a really brilliant book. But when we talked, like I just got such a joy for how much she clearly loves her family, loves her wife and her kid at the time, now kids, like just made me believe in people again. It was just such a joyful experience. And so like, was there an interview that really like kind of just renewed your faith in humanity or like really made you feel good to just do it and have that conversation?
In terms of it, like making me feel something like good, I think that's an excellent way of putting it. And this is a cheesy answer. And I think I could pull out a whole bunch of guests, but the whole first season, this happened on accident in way too short a period. And it just kind of happened. And that's why, I went monthly. Cause I'm someone that values my own grip on reality. but that was like literally like mostly just people that I physically knew and were like, hey, do you want to do this thing? They're like, yeah. But I think the moment when like the show kind of moved on and I sat down with Dr. Rachel Coa, one of our mutual friends, who
yeah.
I hadn't met at that point. I was going to meet her at PAX East last year. I only sort of knew her through Twitter and through like her academic work. And to be treated as someone who is, was at the time so new to the field, and essentially I'd been content creating for barely a year, was so fresh into the PhD. To be treated with such kindness and grace, and just be able to have a discussion and have a laugh and feel really valued, and to sort of know that you can meet one of your heroes and that not end horribly, was just something that made me step away from that and go, maybe I can do it in this field. Maybe I can. Maybe there is a way. If people like that exist. And I've since then, through Rachel, met so many other wonderful people, a lot of whom tend to be affiliated to Take This. Not a coincidence. who have been so wonderfully welcoming and uplifting and supportive at times. That was like the moment where that switched and was like, maybe I do belong here. And that was like a big moment for me personally.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it because she's awesome also, needless to say.
I mean,
we're worried about her mental health in the coming months as she has to let go of Henry Cavill and her Geralt, as we move in that direction. I worry for her. But beyond that,
I mean,
think she's
all
great.
Good things must come to an end. The witch is
I know.
Over.
That's true.
and that's, we've still got the books. We've still got the games.
Yeah, it's true. That's true.
Right. Again, this is a hard question to answer, especially when you're podcasting ahead of real time. But where can people find you? What is the best place? Obviously, all links will be attached forever.
Like, I don't know. Is Twitter still around by the time this airs? Who knows? Like, I've been saying that joke on every podcast I'm on forever. But if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm usually tweeting from Fun and Games Pod, which is my video game podcast, one of my video game podcast's Twitter accounts. But the best place to find me is on Instagram, DJ_Stormageddon. I'm also on Twitch at that same username. I'm on Blue Sky if you have an invite at just DJ Stormageddon. They apparently hate underscores there, I'm told, which is why I couldn't use one. But if you want to stay with me, djstormageddon.com is the best place to go. It's got my Ko-fi, it's got my merch store, it's got all of the links to all of my podcasts, to the Patreon for Fun and Games, a link to the Game Informer show, which I edit, which is hosted by the incredible Alex Van Aken, Kyle Hilliard, and Marcus Stewart. And literally everything I do, all of my socials that are still active, my TikTok, are all at djstormageddon.com. It's the best place to find all of it. If you want to show your love for me, review this podcast that you're listening to on podcast platforms. That's the best thing you can do for me, because it's hard to get those reviews in, and they really do help all of these shows. And then I guess if you want, also go review all my shows. That'd be great too.
Excellent. You see, a true professional. I feel like, it's unfortunate, right? Because I feel like I've learned a lot from you. But that's not going to benefit this episode. It's going to benefit the future ones, right? Like, that's just a really unfortunate byproduct.
Look, a rising tide raises all ships. I'm happy to help. And you've inspired me to want to play, a ton of games and stuff that you've talked about. So it's mutual. You do great work here. And don't ever feel like you're less than or not doing enough, because you're absolutely brilliant. So keep kicking ass.
Thank you. I mean, on what better note to end on? For those watching along, we'll click onto the stream ending screen, the feed ending screen. And as we always say on this show, look after your mind, body, and soul until next time. But thank you for listening. Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Psyched to Be With You. I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I did. If you did, do please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps. Otherwise, check out the description of the episode for the links for the guest, but also to keep up with information about the show and myself. I really hope you enjoyed this listen. Until next time, take it easy. Look after your mind, body, and soul. And I'll see you again for another episode very, very soon. Bye-bye.